Today on the 21st show, the campaign to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois after Dick Durbin's decision to not seek re-election. We'll have the next in our series of conversations. Republican R. Carey Caparelli works in sports marketing, teaches college geography, and is the son of a former state legislator who was a Democrat. We'll talk with him about domestic policy, foreign affairs, and politics in this era dominated by President Donald Trump and MAGA. We also want to put your questions to the candidate, so you can give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey with R. Carey Caparelli for the hour, today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today we continue our conversations with candidates for the Republican and Democratic U.S. Senate primaries in Illinois. This is for the seat vacated or going to be vacated by longtime U.S. Senator Dick Durbin at the end of his term in January 2027. R. Carey Caparelli is running for the Republican nomination. For decades, he's been the president of a firm called Omni Communique, which specializes in sports management and marketing. He's worked with racing drivers and been a driver himself. He's also studied geography, earning master's and doctoral degrees in that topic, and he's been an online instructor for geography at South Dakota State University. And he's had two governor-appointed board positions on the Illinois International Port District and the Illinois Banking and Real Estate Board. Caparelli is from a political family in Illinois. For more than three decades, his late father, Ralph Caparelli, was a Democrat in the Illinois House, representing parts of Chicagoland. Caparelli, the younger, has made several attempts to win elective office, running as a Democrat in 2009 for the House seat vacated by Rahm Emanuel, as a Democrat for the Cook County Board of Commissioners, for the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, both as a Democrat and as a Republican, and for the Illinois House, in a district covering a lot of the same ground as his father's. Those campaigns were not successful, but now he's seeking the Republican Party nomination for U.S. Senate. He joins us for the hour. Carey Caparelli, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Glad to be here.
And we also want to hear from you. You can join us throughout the hour at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, what was it like? Let's start with your family. What was it like growing up in a family so connected in with Illinois politics?
Well, you know, I didn't see my father a lot because he was always constantly driving to Springfield. I think that was a trip that he really disliked quite a bit. You know, he literally did it every week when they were in session. And as a kid, I just remember him packing clothes up and leaving and not coming back until the following weekend.
And that was from 1971 through 2004. I understand he actually former Speaker Madigan beat in seniority during that time.
Yeah, my father was part of leadership, but I don't think he necessarily got along that well with Madigan. I could say this. You know, my father was elected as a Democrat, but he was a conservative Democrat. And he ran in a very conservative district as well. And he unseated a very long-time popular Republican legislature at the time.
So talk to me about your background. You started your career has been mostly in sports management. I think that's fair to say. What drew you to that field?
You know, when I came out of college and I decided I wanted to try driving race cars, and my education was in advertising. So what I did is I targeted American corporations doing business in Europe, and I put together marketing proposals and programs that would allow them to advertise on the race car. And I made a career out of that. It was a lot of fun. And when that career was over, because you can't drive race cars forever, then I started doing management and marketing for others. And after we did that, we expanded into other sports, bicycle racing, boxing, and college hockey events. And I made a career out of it, and it lasted quite a long time. And it kind of ended suddenly because my biggest clients all passed away. So that was the end of that. And I had a client who's an heir to the Jack Daniels fortune, and he always told me he wanted to get involved, have his own business in wine or in liquor. And I happened to be in Argentina, and I said I found the place to do it. And as we were traveling in Europe, as I was running his programs, we'd always look at vineyards in Europe, but they were very, very expensive. So when I was in Argentina, I found the right place, and we built a vineyard south of Mendoza in Argentina that was originally a tomato farm, and we made it a very successful vineyard, and we marketed in the United States. And unfortunately, that friend and client and former teammate passed away as well, and I started teaching, and that came about because I had a professor at Northeastern Illinois University that constantly pushed me to get a PhD. And this is going back probably to 1990. And about 2006, I decided to do it, and I got enrolled. I got admitted and enrolled into a program at the University of London, and I did my PhD, and it was just perfect timing. My career in sports marketing and management ended, and it did go beyond sports marketing. It was all marketing and management as well. And I applied for a job at South Dakota State University to teach geography online, and I got the job, and I've been doing that since 2017.
Even before the pandemic made online education more of a thing than it had been. I do want to stay with the sports question for a moment, because I understand you were a driver yourself. What goes into that? How does that come about?
You know, as a little kid, I was the president of the Mario Andretti fan club. I'm talking about being 9 years old. And I was always very, very close to the sport. And, you know, at some point in time, you know, Mario was my hero, and I said, I got to do it. And I remember I worked very hard one summer to accumulate some monies, and I went to France, and I went to a racing school there, and that started a career in racing.
And if I remember correctly, seeing on your website, you have an endorsement from Andretti, is that?
Yes, in fact, yeah. Having many, many friends in sports, I put together a list of professional athletes that endorse me. You know, athletes, like entertainers, travel the world or travel our country, and they understand politics very, very well. And I think having a list of sports luminaries like that shows that these people know what they're talking about, and I was happy to put that together.
All right, well, let's get to the point of why we are talking today, which is the United States Senate. Why do you want to be a United States Senator?
Well, I always wanted to be in Congress, but I only tried once, and I tried to run as a conservative Democrat, and that didn't work. But I looked at this as an opportunity. The Republican Party establishment has never nominated a conservative that would excite the voters to come out and vote. And the Republican candidates typically mirror the Democrat candidates, and the Democrats are going to win that battle all the time. So I saw this as an opportunity to try to excite the side a little bit to the right rather than to a little bit of the left.
Say more about that. I've heard you say that in other contexts, other interviews, about this idea that the Republicans mirror the Democrats. How do you mean?
Well, I'm sure you're accustomed to the term RINO, Republican in name only. And that means that they're not really following the typical Republican philosophy. They're leaning a little bit to the center or center left, and sometimes a little to the center right as well. But it's not to the positioning where most Republicans stand.
So you're saying the Republican Party has been nominating candidates that aren't conservative enough, is your contention there, basically?
That's correct. There hasn't been a Republican elected since Mark Curt, and that was in 2010.
To the U.S. Senate, yeah. Although, you know, there have been attempts. I would argue Alan Keyes in 2004, although there were some unique circumstances there, was brought in as an extremely conservative person up against the generational talent of Barack Obama. I don't know what you made of his campaign at the time.
Yeah, I recall that, and I recall Alan Keyes used to have a television show on MSNBC, and I believe he was from Maryland, and he never actually moved to Illinois. But as you know, the rules state you don't have to live in the state to run in the state, or you don't have to live in the congressional district to run in the congressional district.
So let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. Our guest for the hour today is R. Kerry Caparelli, one of the candidates seeking the Republican nomination for United States Senator from Illinois. You can join us at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, so one of the benefits of a program like this is we can get kind of in-depth on different policy and news topics that are coming up. So let's start with something that has been much in the news this year, which is immigration policy. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the job that immigration enforcement and Border Patrol have done in places like Chicago and more recently in Minneapolis, Minnesota?
Well, first of all, it's a very, very difficult job to do. And I believe that everybody could do a better job no matter what they're doing. And I would give them a high grade, maybe just short of a 10. You could only do with the work with the tools that you are given, and it's a very difficult task. So again, they could do a better job. When I say better, I mean handling the arrest or the deportation of the many, many illegals that we have in this country. And we have to remember, illegal means unlawful. And I don't have a problem with immigrants coming to this country that take the correct path, and the path is available, but they have to take the correct path. The country's got to be, and the government has to be accountable for these people. If we don't know who they are and where they are, we can't have them here. So it'd be a lot easier just to make that path a little bit more defined to make immigrants come in, but they can't come in here illegally or unlawfully.
Would you support broader legal immigration? Because it's pretty restrictive to come in legally, right? And in fact, you know, for example, refugee policy has really been clamped down during the Trump administration to basically white South Africans and Europeans who don't, you know, approve of their government's positions.
Per se, I think the program is designed to be effective, and that's what it has to be. It must be effective. We can't make it too easy, but we must make it noticeable that if they want to come into this country, that if they follow those rules, they could do it. But you can't. You don't need to make it easier. You just need to make it more defined.
What do you? You mentioned you would give ICE and Border Patrol a grade just below 10. What do you make of the videos of people being dragged from cars, the shootings of people like Rene Good and Alex Preddy, who were American citizens?
Well, I've seen the same videos that everybody else did, and it seems to be consistent that a lot of these protesters are actually breaking the law, and law enforcement's doing what they need to do, not only to protect themselves, but to protect others from these people who are quote-unquote violent. And it's very, very clear that many violent criminals have been arrested because of these procedures, and that's making it safer to have the violent.
What was Alex Preddy? If you said you've seen the video, what was he doing that was illegal or violent?
Well, I think it's obvious. He was not acting tamed. He was being very, very aggressive.
Maybe we've seen different videos. The one I saw, he was sort of going to a woman who had been pushed and pepper sprayed by an agent. President Trump, in response to that, has said you can't have guns, shouldn't bring guns to rallies, and if sought to put the blame on him. What do you think about that? Does this signal a new direction with regard to the Second Amendment and gun owner rights among Republicans?
Well, I'm a concealed carrier, and I don't bring a gun to places where it's not where you don't feel like you're going to have a problem. There's situations where you carry, and there's situations where you don't. And I don't think you bring guns to protests.
Does that go for when there were protests in Michigan, for example, during COVID, and people were bringing semi-automatic rifles in those cases, not just handguns?
Well, you know, maybe we're being a little bit over specific here, so I don't think there's any need to comment further.
Okay. What about the way the agents are acting, you know, not wearing name tags, not, you know, having face coverings on? Do you think that's acceptable? Because we've seen Democrats in Congress sort of laying down a marker. This is something you would have to deal with as a U.S. senator. Democrats are saying, we don't like the masks. We think they should have to wear badge numbers and a last name, you know, on a tag, as most police officers do, local, state, federal, when they're, you know, out enforcing the law. What do you think of that as a sort of marker that the Democrats have laid down in Washington?
I believe all law enforcement officers, whether it's local police, state police, or ICE officials, federal officials, they have families too, and they have to protect themselves. I understand where they're coming from, and I have no problem with that. Yes, they should maybe have a number on them or something of that nature so they could be identified, but they don't have to show their face.
So you don't think they should have to show their face? Okay.
No. Again, you know, I think every human being wants to be protected. And, you know, you put them in a difficult situation like that, and identification becomes an issue. You have to protect yourself.
The Immigration and Customs Enforcement has also seen a huge budget increase this year. I've seen it. Some people say it's larger than the United States Marine Corps at this point. Do you think that's an appropriate use of a way to direct federal money?
I'm supportive of that, yes.
Okay. We are going to take a break. We will continue talking with R. Kerry Caparelli, one of the candidates seeking the Republican nomination for United States Senate here in Illinois. If you have questions, you can join us. The number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. We will continue this conversation after a short break. It's the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today with R. Kerry Caparelli, who's running in the Republican Party primary for United States Senate to seek the party nomination to compete in the general election that would fill the vacancy created by Dick Durbin's decision to not run for another term after his 30 years in the Senate, I should say. His term expires in January 2027. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today here on the 21st show. 800-222-9455. Let's talk about some additional domestic policy areas. Abortion, obviously, is still a contentious issue. It's become more relevant in recent years with the Supreme Court's decision striking down the Roe versus Wade precedent that had stood from since the 1970s. Would you support a national law prohibiting abortion?
Most likely, yes. I do believe that, you know, it might be a state issue, but in general, yes.
Are there any exceptions, as some people sometimes say they have?
Sure. Rape and incest.
Okay. What about banning abortion medicine nationally, such as mifepristone, which, you know, people can still obtain through the mail even if their individual states have banned it?
I think it's very dangerous, and I would consider that as just a different form of abortion.
Okay, so you wouldn't support necessarily leaving it up to the states. You would favor a national ban.
No, I'd be open to it being nationalized.
I see.
But as I said, I think it's a state issue.
Okay. Another issue that's been getting a lot of conversation these days are LGBT rights. You know, marriage has been legal now for some time. What do you think about that? Should it stay that way? Should there be an effort at repealing that?
I believe there's only two sexes, male and female, and everybody should be treated equally.
Okay. And on marriage, so you is should same-sex marriage remain legal? No.
As I said, I believe there's only two sexes, and it just doesn't make sense. As a Christian, it doesn't make sense.
Okay. And so I don't want to assume here, would you then support, you know, transgender care for adults? And we'll stay with adults because I know people think of adults and youth differently sometimes. What do you think about health care for that? Should that remain legal?
Well, health care is a separate issue. I don't consider that health care. I'm against any of that, those types of surgeries. Getting into health care, you know, the president just 2 weeks ago announced the great health care plan, and I think we should give that a chance.
Tell me more about it.
Well, again, it's still new, so I don't know much about it. But if the president is putting it out there, I'm sure it's something I could get behind.
Hmm. Well, okay, so this is actually something else I wanted to ask you about, because the Affordable Care Act is something that, you know, is commonly known as Obamacare. Republicans have been, you know, unhappy with that for more than a decade now, trying to dismantle it, talking about alternatives. What do you think is the path forward in terms of health care access in America?
Well, there's two things. When I think about health care, I think of two things: availability and affordability. And right now, both are lacking. You know, it's very difficult to see a doctor. It's very difficult to pay those bills after you see a doctor.
Is there a government role for ensuring that, sort of greater affordability or accessibility, as you were saying?
Healthcare is very important. So, yes, I do think the government does have a role.
One of the...
and refined.
Sorry, say that again?
Obviously, Obamacare, or the ACA, has not fulfilled all of its dreams. So we have to make it better. And hopefully the president's Great American Healthcare Plan is able to fill those holes.
What about the subsidies that, you know, for the Affordable Care Act? This was something that for people who are, you know, sort of self-employed, they buy insurance on the marketplace. Depending on their income level, they could get some assistance from the government in paying for those premiums. Those went away as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was signed into law last year. Do you think that was the right policy move?
Well, from what I understand, there's been a lot of fraud in that capacity, in that area. And again, it's got to be refined. It's got to be clean.
Okay. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, it's the 21st show. We're speaking with R. Kerry Caparelli, who's one of the Republicans seeking his party's nomination for United States Senate here in Illinois. Let's talk about economic policy. We had a text message from one of our listeners earlier in this campaign cycle. Lloyd in Danville wanted to know about outsourcing of jobs. He wants to know what you would do to bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States.
You know, I was asked this question just two or three days ago. And, you know, what's one of the things that we need to do in Illinois? Illinois needs to become more industrialized again. At one time, it was an industrial state, and we've lost that ability. And per se, America's lost that ability. You know, everything's outsourced to China. We have to start bringing these jobs back, because it's also a security problem, a national security problem, not to have industry.
As far as outsourcing,
I just want to throw this in there. I believe in the Right to Work Act.
Right to work. Okay, that's the idea that people wouldn't have to join a labor union or pay dues, I guess, to a union if their shop unionized. What about tariffs? Is something that the president has made the point he thinks that this is a way to sort of spur American manufacturing. If you make importing goods really, more expensive through tariffs, that maybe businesses will be inspired to open up plants in America again. What do you think of that as a sort of policy tool?
Another favorite question that we've been getting. I'm supportive of the tariffs, and I think there's indications that the tariffs are working. So I think we have to give them a little bit more of a chance to work to its complete capability. One of the things I did notice, having gone to journalism school, I try to always watch both sides of the coin on TV. I'll watch, Fox TV on one end, and then I'll put on MSNBC on the other. And there's a lot of bias, particularly on the left. But I think we have to give more of a chance.
More of a chance, like more time, you mean? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We have seen Illinois farmers, you know, sort of as this trade war has ramped up, the president will impose tariffs. Other countries have stopped buying Illinois soybeans, American soybeans, really, as much, for example. What do you think the government response should be in terms of what Illinois farmers are going through?
Illinois farmers are the foundation of our economical system in Illinois. You know, when you drive through the state like we've been doing, you realize that farms are a huge, huge percentage of our total land base. And we all know how important it is. And, you know, having been on the port, I know how important it is for us to export our farming products. I've seen it all the time. And I'm completely 100,000% behind our farmers. Very, very important.
What does it say to you, though, that the tariffs, I mean, it's kind of a, how would you say, a difficult point, right? Because the president really loves tariffs. Tariffs seem to be the thing that has really been pinching farmers, among other factors like higher input costs and so on that we've talked about on this program many times. But, you know, how do you strike that balance?
You know, I want to bring this up again. There's a lot of bias in what's reported, and what you see on one station is not necessarily see what you see on another. And I think it's nobody wants to hurt the farmers, and I think the farmers are the government is doing what they can to assist the farmers, and I would call for more assistance. But it's not, you know, our farming industry is what makes this country so good, and we all see, you know, we all know how much our farming products are exported throughout the world. You know, you see it in China, you see it in Europe. You there, Brian?
I'm here. Sorry, I thought you were. You sounded like you were mid-sentence. I was giving you an opportunity to finish. I never know when to interrupt or not. All right. So let's one other domestic policy question. This relates to industry and agriculture, and you as an automotive man, a driver yourself in the past, maybe might have some insight here. Do you think the American automotive industry, you know, it had been talking about their shift to electric? Does it need to, you know, should it continue that? Should it pull back on that, focus back on internal combustion engines? You know, let's start with that. Let's start with that point.
You know, the majority of the people I know that are not pro-electric cars, they don't want them. But I do know people that have electric cars that love them. So, you know, we got a mixed audience there. Personally, I don't see the benefits in having an electric car. There's a lot of failures on them. They have not been perfected yet. And I definitely think it's hurt the industry because, as you could see, what's going on with Ford, you know, even Ford is increasing its old gasoline models, taking back the electric models. And I believe Jaguar, even in the British company Jaguar, they went 100% electric and their company fell apart.
And yet we do have Illinois companies like Rivian, for example, based in Bloomington Normal, or at least it's one of its big plants is in Bloomington Normal, trying to compete as Chinese electric vehicles are really taking over the world, as some would say it. Talk about the balance and striking a balance, if you see one that needs to be made there.
Speaking of that balance that you just talked about, Mexico has increased or has made huge buys of bringing in Chinese cars into Mexico. And, you know, at one time, Mexico was the biggest importer of German cars. And in fact, Volkswagen built a huge plant in Puebla. And, you know, that plant's slowed down and it's being replaced by all these Chinese imports. We have to be careful.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with R. Kerry Caparelli, seeking the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate here. One of six people seeking the Republican. It's governor, there are four Republicans running. We have been speaking with so many candidates, I'm losing track, but we're going to get stay on it. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. One of the constitutional roles of a U.S. senator is to advise and confirm the president on nominations for high government positions. What do you think of President Trump's cabinet selections so far?
Well, you know, I don't have the information that he has, but I can't argue with those decisions. I think the president's very demanding, and that's how you know, and being demanding usually gets you the best result. So I have no problem with the people he's picked, and I have no problem if, you know, someone wants to leave because of the demands being made. You know, you just find somebody better.
One of the more controversial nominee, cabinet member, is RFK Jr., who has really sought to upend the public health consensus on childhood vaccinations in America. What do you think of that?
You know, I find him to be very unique. I recall as a young kid, I was always impressed by his father. It was his personality, not his policies, because as a kid, I didn't know his policies, but I was always electrified by his appearance on TV. I thought he would have been a great president as a child. I like Junior. I think he's right on. He's taking a very difficult path, but I think he's being right forward with it.
So you think it's a good idea to revisit, you know, some of the, you know, vaccinations that, you know, scientists and physicians in, you know, the American Pediatric Medical Association, I'm forgetting the exact term of that off the top of my head, but, you know, say that polio vaccine, things like that have saved many, many lives over the years. You think that's due for a revisiting?
Well, you have to remember that these companies that produce these products are driven by profits. So I tend to think that we need more research before we just release everything into the public domain. And that's particularly true with COVID. You know, I know of numerous people that got sick from COVID vaccines. So we have to be careful. You know, there's a fine line between trying to protect the people with healthcare and profitability for these large pharmaceutical companies.
What do you think? So taking a step back, right, in the Senate, there has, you know, at times been people who tried to maintain this tradition of bipartisanship. Dick Durbin is certainly one of them, much to the chagrin of people in his own party. Right. He is a lot of younger progressive types really don't care for Dick Durbin's approach. Talk to me about how you view the role of bipartisanship as a potential United States senator.
Well, something that's very difficult to see today. I'm going to mention quickly something that my father told me some time ago. He knew Dick Durbin when he was in Illinois state government. And he said, Dick was always a really nice guy, you know, and he said he was, you know, a very moderate policymaker. He said, but then he got extremely liberal, he goes, and I don't know why he did that. But I think what we see now is a lot of movements towards socialism in the United States. And a lot of these people have worked their way into government, and we have to be careful of that as well. It's downright scary because it doesn't allow for any bipartisan policies to go through. The left today is not the left of what it was 20 years ago. They want much, much more. Like I said, I believe they're much closer to socialism than representing a democratic form of government.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are speaking with R. Kerry Caparelli. He is among the Republicans seeking his party's nomination for United States Senate here in Illinois. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. I want to say we've had many of the candidates who are seeking the Democratic and Republican nominations join us on the program. You can go to our website, 21stshow.org, and listen to other interviews in the series, including some of the other Republicans who are running. Pamela Denise Long and Don Tracy have stopped by the program, as well as many of the Democrats, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, and others. Again, you can find a link at our website. Click on any one of the interviews, and there should be a tag at the bottom of the page to take you to the rest. That's 21stshow.org. We'll have more with R. Kerry Caparelli after a short break. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today with R. Kerry Caparelli, who is seeking the Republican Party nomination for United States Senate in Illinois. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Let's talk a little bit about foreign policy, which is, of course, another important aspect of the work of the United States Senate per the U.S. Constitution. Do you think America should seek to conquer or acquire in some way Greenland from Denmark?
First of all, foreign policy is the most important issue facing us because foreign policy comprises of all components, economic, military, and what sort. So it's the number one topic. I don't think we're looking at colonization or invading countries to take them over. The situation with Greenland is a bit different. Its population is so small. It's smaller than Park Ridge, Illinois. If it's available, purchasing land from a country is not unusual. It has been done. In fact, that's how the United States gained Alaska. We purchased it from Russia. So,
what if it's not available? I believe that Denmark has said they don't want to sell. Should we take it by force? As the president
I think it's just two points here. One, what does Greenland want? Since they're not, they're a territory of Denmark, but they're not. It's not part of Denmark as a nation. That's number one. Number two, I'm not sure if that's our actual goal. I think our goal is probably to increase military presence to provide protection for Europe and for North America.
Well, that's an interesting question because that does raise sort of get into the idea of NATO, which the president seems to not be a fan of, seems to think it's kind of outlived its usefulness. What do you think of NATO and America's, you know, sort of the post-World War II alliance?
Oh, I think the president does value NATO. I think the only thing the president's trying to push forward is for NATO to increase their military spending and their contributions to NATO financially.
That's interesting because
I
hear
supportive of NATO in my opinion, and I'd be extremely supportive of NATO.
Okay, I feel like I hear it differently, but I guess that's what makes America great. The United States, as I mentioned, that we've been a global superpower since World War II, which is the lifetime of the vast majority of Americans. America First and MAGA really seem to be pulling us back from that idea that we should be a global superpower. What do you think of that direction for America?
I like to see America not become an isolationist state, but to a certain degree, I think there's some advantages to avoid a lot of the bad issues going on in the world. So I like to be in the protectionist mode, and that's what I think the president's doing. He's putting us in a mode of being protected.
Does the United States have an interest in a free Ukraine?
Another question that comes up often. Yes, I believe they do. The president does, and the Republican Party does. But at the same time, if the Ukraine was in NATO, hypothetically, before the Russian invasion, we'd be in a world war right now.
Arguably the other way of looking at that is perhaps Russia would not have invaded, as they have not done with Poland and Latvia and Lithuania and some of the other NATO countries that are there.
We have to understand that Russia wants the Ukraine because of its military locations. It gives them access to the Black Sea, which goes into the Mediterranean, which goes into the Atlantic. That's why they want the Crimea. And they stole that property from the Ukraine. And I think the Ukraine has every right to try to regain it back.
Another foreign policy issue that's been much discussed in recent years is Israel. It's been more than 2 years since Hamas attacked Israel, and Israel has been waging war in Gaza. How do you assess the United States' response to the October?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because that's a situation that we're not going to fix very, very easily. But we have to remember, Hamas was elected by the Palestinian people. And I think they, if they could have democratic elections in the future, they have to replace Hamas so we could negotiate with some effectiveness. Israel's our ally, and we don't abandon allies, and we have to treat them as such. But what we have to do is we have to find a solution that benefits the Palestinians and the Israelis and make everybody happy. If only one side's happy, we're not going to fix it.
And there have been, yeah,
the way to fix it is for the Palestinian people to elect a government that's willing to negotiate and try to fix the problem.
Some of the assessments of Israel's response to the attacks have been, you know, anywhere from atrocities to war crimes to genocide is a word that's thrown around. 70,000 Palestinians have been killed, reportedly, in Gaza. What do you think of that?
It's a reaction to what Hamas is doing. You know, not, I don't think it's necessarily targeting all Palestinians, and it shouldn't be, because, again, you know, it's their government that were that's causing the problems, the Hamas government.
Another issue that came up just this year is Venezuela. What do you think of the Trump administration's decision to capture Venezuela's president last month?
Well, you know, he wasn't captured for military reasons. He was captured for drug charges. And, again, the media kind of distorted that. You don't see that all the time, but that's the reason why he was arrested. You know, it was a reason. You know, I'm sure there's a little bit more to it, but I understand sometimes you fabricate reasons, but that was a real reason. He was arrested on for drug charges.
All right, let me remind listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. We're talking with R. Kerry Caparelli, seeking the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate. And let's go now to the phones. We have Brian calling from Genoa on line one. Brian, thank you for calling in.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for hello. Thanks for taking my call. One quick question. I have to ask you, what would you answer Trump's loyalty question about the 2020 election? Do you believe that the election was who won that election would be the question?
Well, I have my own personal opinion. I've seen voter fraud. I've experienced voter fraud when I ran for Metropolitan Water. Voter fraud does exist. And I think to the average American, they probably, you know, they hear about it, but they don't experience it. I've experienced it. I've seen it. It does exist.
So you have proof.
So if it's
So do you think there was enough voter fraud? I
suggested it to the two major newspapers in Chicago, and they both ignored it.
I guess my question then.
I can give you an example if you want.
Well, let me frame it specifically though about as the and Brian, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. This is a question we've asked a lot of Republican candidates in recent years because it is a big loyalty test for the president. Do you think the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump?
I told you my opinion is yes.
You think so? Okay. And even though that, you know, Georgia had an audit of its entire election run by Republican Brad Raffensperger down there and found not, you know, he lost by more than 11,000 votes, they found at most a couple dozen instances of non-citizens who were even registered. Most of them hadn't voted, for example. But you think there was enough that it actually swayed the election to Joe Biden away from Trump?
I think it's, again, it's just my opinion. It's, you know, I have no proof for this, but I think it's very possible that that's what occurred, yes.
Does that mean you would have voted on January 6th, or I guess it was the morning of January 7th, to not certify the election results that day? If you had been,
I don't have enough information in front of me to make a flash decision like that right now.
Well, on this topic, what do you think about President Trump's decision to pardon everyone convicted with, or even charged with criminal wrongdoing in relation to that attack at the Capitol building?
I'm sure every decision he made was made on an individual basis, and if there was enough evidence to find a person not guilty, then that's fine.
You think he individually evaluated them and just did every single person involved in January 6th?
Him personally? No, I'm sure it would be his staff.
Okay. Let me ask you, you've run a lot of campaigns since 2009 for anywhere, like you mentioned, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District up to Congress. I wonder what you've learned about those races, what you've learned from, you know, waging campaigns in the past.
I could tell you that I found out that politics is very, very dirty. That's the first thing that always comes up to my mind. I find media could be very, very biased. And I think there's a lot of dishonesty going, and the last thing is money helps.
I mentioned you've run as a Democrat sometimes in the past, as recently as 2020. Talk about what has motivated you to switch back and forth between the two parties in the course of your, you know, political life.
My political philosophy has never changed. I've always been a conservative. And I ran as a Democrat because, you know, in the Cook County, you can't win as a Republican. So I ran as a conservative Democrat. Not that I am a hard Democrat. I'm not. Again, so, I'm a conservative.
Yeah. We talked about, you mentioned at the top of our conversation that the reason, and, you know, I sometimes ask Republicans, no Republican has won a statewide election, either, you know, Senate or governor since, or president, frankly, since 2014, when Bruce Rauner was elected governor of Illinois, Leslie Munger was elected the controller, Judy Bartopinko won statewide that year. You said that your view is that Republicans have been nominating people who are too similar to Democrats. I'm going to just offer a counter hypothesis I'd like you to react to, which is that since Donald Trump has become the dominant force in American politics, Illinois Republicans have not been able to win statewide. And as long as he is the dominant force, it's going to continue to be all but impossible for them to win. What do you think of that?
Well, I think Donald Trump got about 44-45% of the vote in Illinois when he won the last election. And at the same time, the rest of the Republican nominees...
54-43. That was Harris 54, Trump 43. Yep.
43, okay. Close enough. But the rest of the ticket was not offering... It was an establishment ticket, and it wasn't offering the conservative voters enough energy to come out and vote. So I do believe there is some surplus there that that I could get as being the conservative nominee.
R. Kerry Caparelli is running for United States Senate, seeking the Republican Party nomination. The election is coming up in March. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show. I appreciate your time.
I really enjoyed it, Brian. Thank you very much.
That is all the time we have for our program today. Once again, you can find other interviews in our series with candidates for United States Senate as well as governor, although we've only gotten one candidate for governor who agreed to come on the program. But you can find other ones at our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find our email address, social media, our voicemail line, all the ways to get in touch with us if you have comments or questions about our coverage, questions for future candidates on our program, or anything else you want to write to us about, please do so through our website, which again is 21stshow.org. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Alan Gelzo is a Lincoln scholar. He's coming to Illinois later this week. He's written many award-winning books. He's scheduled to give the keynote address at the Abraham Lincoln Association's annual banquet. His latest book is called Our Ancient Faith, and it explores Lincoln's ideas and vision for democracy and how they led him and America through the Civil War. We'll talk with Alan Gelzo live tomorrow here on the 21st Show. Again, I mentioned our website. We've also got our past segments there, and you can find links to subscribe to our podcast at our website, 21stshow.org. You can also look us up on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, including now YouTube. Just search for the Illinois Public Media page there. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Colson Kahn, Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.